Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
This studio has henceforth been named Blinky. All right, we're recording.
Oh, great.
Isn't that right?
That's so fast.
I know, I'm sorry. There's no lead up to it. We just start.
You just start.
Not particularly professional, but
nope,
you know.
Not at all. But
it's serviced us well so far.
This is the operation that we've
established. I love it. No,
that we've
it's
established.
Good.
Emma Caulfield is here.
Hi.
Yay.
Yay.
I'm so glad this finally worked out.
Me too. My gosh. It only took like how many tries?
It only took a couple tries, but that's what happens sometimes.
This? I don't need this, do I?
You can. You can have the headphones on or not.
No, whatever, I can't really hear anything, to be
I know,
honest.
Right?
So I'm just not going to do it. It's right. Better.
Can you? Are they not
they're
on?
Not really
on?
Like,
is it up?
I don't know.
Volume up?
Let's see. How's that sound?
I'm talking.
Can
you hear me?
Yeah, it's in one ear.
Pretend like I've got.
I got stereo, guys. Thanks.
It's in my good ear, so that's okay. No, I'm serious. I actually have a bad ear.
Oh, well, I shouldn't laugh at that.
No, it's fine.
Unless it's a funny story.
It's boring. I just blew my nose too hard on an airplane.
No, really?
For real. Yeah, and I had a really bad head cold, so it just...
It popped an eardrum?
Well, it didn't... I mean, it's not destroyed. I mean, I still can hear out of it, but it's you know, it's not quite the same. It's never been the same since.
Oh, no.
So like, huh? What? In my good ear. Yeah.
You've got one of those old, like, those tin horns.
Exactly.
That people in the,
yeah,
the Victorian amazing people had.
What's that now? Yeah. My grandfather has bad hearing because he was a starter for races.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was always like, you know, years and years of just like shooting a gun.
What a weird profession. Yeah, yeah, I just start races.
It wasn't a profession.
You ready? Go. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm still in work mode.
It was a pastime.
Still in work mode.
It was just a thing he did in the town he worked at. Now he has hearing aids in both ears. And he literally says who's in the what now.
He says who's in the what now?
Yeah. Unironically, he says, it's like if you say something, he goes, who's in the what now?
Oh, that's adorable.
It's like a Abbott and Costello skit right there.
Is this in Hawaii?
No, he did it in Hawaii for a bit, but when he was he grew up in Orland, California.
Oh, well, there's the race starting industry there is huge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, high schools and that's about it.
People wanting to run places.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Emma, how are you? What's going on? We don't really know each other through the the webs.
I know.
And of course,
I told you I remember you very fondly from, because I'm a crazy obsessive overwatcher of my favorite shows. So I remember you from Rashomama and CSI from forever ago.
I did one episode of CSI.
I love that. No, it was so good. You were so funny. You stood out.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
And that's how you'll always be remembered.
That's weird. I had no idea he was in CSI.
Did I just do something bad?
No, not at all.
I was stoked about that.
It was years ago. It was. I'm happy about it. It's one of the fun things that I've done.
It was funny. You were hot for Seidel. It was great.
I had the hots for her. Uh-huh. And then no one's going to give a fuck about that. I don't know why I'm giving Blu-ray commentary on my episode of CSI. But
I care.
But they were going to have her character like flirt back. And so, and like there was going to be romantic tension. And mm-hmm. then they
removed all that stuff. And I was like, and then of course, as a performer, I was like, oh no, we met and she thought I was atrocious and went to them and goes, there's no fucking way I would ever go with this guy. But then a couple episodes later, what we found out is that she was involved
with Grissom.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that's maybe more of what it was.
It wasn't you.
That it wasn't me. It was her. It wasn't me. It was her.
Oh, it's funny.
But that was a really fun shoot. And you go into a show like that, and it's really intimidating because everyone's. I mean, you work on stuff
like
all the time.
And, I know. And you go in, it's like high school all over again. It's traumatizing. Sometimes it's very, very, very warm, but other times it's you feel very much on the outside, and it's kind of awkward.
And you don't know what the politics are and who doesn't.
So I just don't talk. I'm just really quiet.
Really?
Yeah, I'm just really quiet. I just speak when spoken to in a lot of cases. I just don't want to tread.
What was the most awkward experience? You don't have to say the production.
No, I'm trying to think. Well, no one's ever been rude. No one's ever been mean or anything. I mean, not in that situation.
Right.
No one's ever been mean. I don't know. I actually have to think about that. I've done a... I don't know.
Well, maybe you're just lucky in that you've worked on a lot of nice things with nice people.
I have been actually very lucky. I was shooting Leverage like 4 weeks ago, and that was probably one of the nicest group of people I've ever met. Timothy Hutton's a legend, and I was trying not to completely lose my mind over that. I was like, wow, I just love you. Like, you're so talented. What's that like? And, he just won an Oscar. No big deal.
Yeah, just a little Oscar.
Yeah, just a little Oscar. And then, of course, Jonathan Frakes was directing me, and then I was just not going to geek out about that at all. I was like, no, I'm not going to say I own all 7 seasons of Star Trek. I'm not going to talk about it. But then he was like, hey, Emma Caulfield, big fan. I'm like, oh, opening. I'm like, oh, my God, no, I'm the big fan. I love you. Like, I go to sleep watching you. Like,
hey, take it easy.
What? Yeah. I thought this was okay. I was just kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I ask you a side disgusting question?
Yeah.
This is something that genuinely hit my brain the other day. How many people do you think have been fucked by Oscars? Now, like...
You mean...
It is one of the only ones.
Like people who've had Oscars...
Is this a metaphor? Like, fucked by the win? No,
literally by the statue. Like, I was wondering... Because I would think that would be a thing that
it would be women only, really, right?
Maybe. Not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
But you would think in your head, like... Someone would look at an Oscar and go, listen, I'm not a weirdo, but just to be able to say...
I think
like,
it'd be really uncomfortable.
Maybe. How big are they? I've never seen one.
They're just oddly shaped.
But not as uncomfortable as a Golden Globe.
Or the Emmy.
Right.
Yeah.
Which has the spire like and the wings.
You're right. The Golden Globe would be far more uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Or the People's Choice Award.
Oh, I don't even know what's that look like?
And you're just trashy if you let someone fuck you with a Cable Ace Award.
Yeah, exactly. And a Teen Choice Award, you get arrested.
Or the Moon Man, yeah. The MTV Moon Man. They still give those out?
In the Nickelodeon, what happens with the Nickelodeon's Kid's Choice Award is it's halfway in your ass and someone goes, what are you doing? You go, I don't know, and then they dump slime on you.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
See? That was a good callback.
I won a gold, what do you guys call them at E? Golden Tater? Tater Tot? Tater? Do you guys still
golden
do that?
Golden Hanger?
No, it was like...
Oh, it's the soup?
God. They're like, they're shaped like a potato.
Oh, I don't know what that is. What is that?
I don't know. It was like for television or whatever. I think maybe I'm speaking out of my ass. Maybe it's not just for television. I don't know. It was like favorite funny girl or something.
That's awesome.
And it was in the shape of a potato.
And
short. I do somewhere. But that would be quite uncomfortable. And then obviously I'm visualizing it.
That would not be a good way to go. I think it's just Oscar is the only one.
The only one
that works.
Or the dildo award.
There it is.
Oh, my God. Like an AVN. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. That's really... shit, I'm an idiot. You're from California area, correct?
I am. Just south of here, San Diego.
Oh, my gosh. Where San Diego Comic-Con started. You go to a lot of Comic-Cons before?
Yeah. I've been there once. One time. I will go next year, probably hopefully with a panel, like a new media panel. And the stuff we wanted to do it this year, but we just weren't ready in time. It was just not going to happen. So next year we'll go, and that'll be the first time I've been there since. I think they sent me there for Darkness Falls, something like promote Darkness Falls back in whatever the hell that was, 2004
?
So it's been a while since I've been down there. I loved it personally, and it's gotten even more crazy since I've been there.
Now it's
cool to go. When I went, it was like all the, nerds unite. And now it's, it's so corporate, I hear.
That one's pretty corporate. But the other ones around the country aren't as corporate. That's really the most corporate one. Yeah. That's the shiny one that all the Hollywood...
It's just close. That's the only reason. It's just close to L.A.
I guess that's true. Yeah, I guess that's true. I like all the cons kind of have their own sort of mutant power. And apparently...
I've heard Dragon Con's interesting.
Dragon Con.
Have you been there? I've not been there.
I almost went this year, but I had just come off a run of doing, like, working every weekend out of town. And I was about to buy my ticket for Dragon Con. And I was like, wait a minute. I actually have a couple days where I don't have to do anything. And if I go to Dragon Con, I'm not going to sleep. And apparently Dragon Con is one big, like, cosplay orgy. And I just didn't know if I had the energy for it this year.
To fuck all those cosplayers.
I'm not saying that they would. I'm not saying that some furry would present.
Just turn around.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying that it would be easy for me to do that. I'm just saying that it felt like it would have required a lot of energy.
It probably would have. And going back to furries, it's actually another thing CSI educated me on. I never knew that existed, by the way.
Really?
Plushies and furries had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there is
like
a difference, though, right?
Other world.
As far as I know, there's like a lot of separation that they feel between plushies and furries.
I don't know what the differentiation is. I think it has something to do with the actual contact.
Yeah. Of them are just people that just like dressing up like that. Others are like are people that enjoy dressing up like that and fucking.
Yeah, I don't.
And then there's weird ones where it's like if you're dressed up as an animal and you have pants on, those are usually the ones that you fuck.
What?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
That's
so
the
whole
sign?
Hierarchy.
Yeah, there. There's it's a whole like weird
system.
Well, because they're the most anthropomorphized.
Yeah.
Oh, because they have pants. On,
Shannon, yeah. Shannon Lucas, one of the writer's assistants on the on Web Soup, like he was at a hotel and that hotel just happened to be having a furry plushy kind of thing.
I would love to stumble upon
just
that.
Just happened?
There was a concert nearby, so he stayed at this place and they were having a convention.
So basically, you start seeing all these people, and you're like, wait a minute, this feels like it's a thing now.
Yeah. It was him and Bruce, and they were drinking in the bar in the lobby, and then all of a sudden they just came out of a conference room. And
wouldn't that be fun to stumble upon that?
Yeah.
That would be a happy accident.
Yeah.
That's why I always keep a furry costume in my car, guys, you just never know when that's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
You just never know.
I've accidentally gone to Disney on Gay Day and worn a red shirt accidentally.
Now, I would love...
That's true.
I would absolutely love to do that. When was that?
It was like I think it's a weekend in October or something.
That sounds fun.
You're talking about Disney? Like
Disneyland.
Like Disneyland?
Yeah.
They have Gay Day?
They have Gay Day where,
well, it's unofficial.
It's unofficial and everyone comes out and they wear.
They also there's a goth day where
day too.
Yeah, that's got to be kind of actually a lot of fun too.
That's the most enjoyable.
Just
of
because
bunch.
Of the just the juxtaposition of.
When are we gonna fucking steampunk Space Mountain? You're gonna go down there and steam and do like the little brass steam powered cart.
There's actually a.
That's where I found out I'm a cute bear.
Oh, that's adorable.
A little koala.
Yeah.
There's a story about where a bunch of Orange County skinheads were gonna go and have like a day at Disneyland.
Oh Jesus!
And but somehow through some mastermind Disney situation, they found out about it,
awesome.
And then they were able to circumvent
disaster.
It, and not let anyone
send a
in.
Giant mouse to kick the shit out of the
yeah,
skinheads.
Exactly.
Amazing.
You hate the Jews, huh?
Well, Walt would have been behind that, right?
Yeah, Walt. Yeah, yeah. Just honoring Walt Disney.
Oh, Jesus. So, Emma, where did you go to college?
I went to a few different ones. I never graduated, sadly.
Me either.
I just kept working, and so it just never happened. I initially filed followed an ex-boyfriend. embarrassing. I know, seriously, it's so embarrassing. It was just a mistake on so many levels.
But you were. It sounds like you were a kid. Like,
I was.
Really,
I was 17. I was
an
idiot.
There you go.
And he, you know, I was set to go to I think it was USC. I don't remember where I was going to go. It was something like that. And he was a couple years older than me, and he was going into the communications department at San Francisco State. So he's like, come up to San Francisco State. I'm like, well, what am I going to do up there? What do I do? I don't know anything about the school. I don't even know. Fog, San Francisco, too cold, whatever. I was there for a semester. I did. I actually followed him up there. I was miserable. I wanted to just, it was just a bad, it was a dark
That's
face.
A bad thing to do with that
But
age.
That's when you're supposed to do that stuff, though.
Yeah.
You have to get that
it
out of the
like
way.
It was like Felicity, but not nearly as cool. They were just bad all the way around. Yeah,
I feel
no
like
happy ending there.
You don't want to be you don't want to be someone who drops everything at 32 and goes, you know, like at 17, your life is still pretty portable.
Yeah. Yes. No, so, it was. And it was, it ended up being fine. I went back to San Diego. I took classes anywhere I could take them, from UCSD to the junior colleges, whatever. And I was like, well, I'm going to have to wait till I'm a junior. I have to transfer in to somewhere else, and ended up transferring into UCLA, and then quickly dropped that because then I was like, you should be an actress. I'm like, okay. And then that just... That just kind
Is
of
that
took
just what
me
happens
on a
at UCLA?
On a trajectory. Apparently, well,
same
no,
thing
I it was
Jesus.
No, I wasn't stopped there. I was working. I was waitressing at some restaurant down in Westwood, and this guy came up to me. He was with this agency, Writers and Artists. And
oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's like, hey, you know, you remind me of blah blah blah. Have you ever thought about doing this? I'm like, no. I mean, yeah, I you know, I enjoy it like as a hobby. I'm, you know, I was like, planned everything out. Like, no, I'm going to get my psych degree, and it's going to be, you know. It's like, well, you know, if you change your mind, you want to, I don't know, give it a shot. You know, here's my number or whatever. And I eventually called him. I don't remember how much time passed, but I eventually was like, you know, this is stupid. Like, this could be a fun adventure. Why don't I just give it a try? And then I ended up on 90210, and that was it. It was pretty. It was very quick. I mean, I did a few. I think I did a commercial. I mean, I just started, and then. And then that was it.
That's better than the alternative where you get fucked by an Oscar in a van.
Yeah.
Where
ironically,
I went to UCLA.
In the 90210 zip code.
I wonder if we were there around the same time.
I don't know.
I'm positive I'm older than you are, but
I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you age yourself? Do you out yourself with your age? Well, I guess anything. Everything's on IMDb
anyway.
Fucking
knows. Where did you work in Westwood?
I want to say, well, it's not there anymore. What was it called? It was a pizza. It was a pizza place, and then I worked at Maloney's.
Yeah, you worked at Maloney's?
I did.
Oh, my God.
I
we
did.
Drank there
was
once
a
or twice.
Cocktail waitress at Maloney's. The only job I've been fired from, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because I didn't. It's just really bad. I was a horrible waitress. I was popular, but I was bad. And I just didn't feel like working, really. And so I would just at the kitchen. This was just too much work for me. The kitchen was way far away, and it had crap food anyway. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to get people drunk, and I'm going to make more money that way, whatever. And so, you know, all these guys, whatever, frat guys would come in, and they're like, oh, we want the chili cheese, whatever the hell. And I'm like, you know, you actually don't. You don't want that. It's really bad. But, you know, what's on tap is whatever. And they're like, oh, well, thanks for the tip. Yeah, okay, well, we'll get something later or whatever. And I just get them drunk, and they didn't look too fondly on that at all. They got wind of my game, and out I went.
Don't
they make
pushing
more
the chili
money
cheese fries
on liquor?
Huh?
Don't they make more money on liquor?
It had more to do with the fact that I was saying their food was shitty and not actually selling their entire menu. You know, it was just,
They probably would have wanted you to get them drunk and put
and
chili
put
cheese
food.
Fries.
Yeah, I just didn't want to. I just couldn't be bothered with that at the time. Yeah.
So you went to UCLA as well?
Define went. I was literally, I moved to LA. And then, I mean, literally, like, it happened very, very quickly.
I must have you must have gotten me drunk at some point.
I probably did. And I you know, I mean, they were taking night classes. It wasn't a very long period of time. I am surprised I was even able to work there. I wasn't even 21. I was 20 then.
Oh, wow.
And I was serving drinks.
I think you
can
serve after 18. I think 18 and up, you can serve.
You can, you just can't go behind the bar.
At a restaurant, you can serve.
It was a bar.
Oh.
I mean, I guess it did. They had bar food, but it wasn't by any means a restaurant.
So Westwood has changed so much since
I haven't been down there in, I think, since then.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't been down there forever.
Still full of college kids.
That part hasn't changed. Yeah. Well, Westwood used to be a bunch of like mom and pop stores and restaurants and stuff, and then one by one the rent in Westwood got jacked up so much. Well, first of all, there were the New Jack City riots.
The what?
When the movie New Jack City came out,
there
was a riot in Westwood.
Really?
At the Fox Theater or something?
Yeah, there were riots in Westwood and someone got shot, and you know, it was there was a little bit of a thing, and so for a couple of years Westwood was dead. and there were all these mom and pop places, and then Westwood started to get busy again, and the rents all went up, and all the mom and pop places started going out of business in favor of your California Pizza Kitchens and Maloney's. Maloney's was a different bar before that, and I can't remember what it was called, but
I think I worked at that bar.
Oh, you did?
I think. Oh, no, I didn't. I had a couple. The place that I first started closed, and then I don't remember. This is just so long.
They opened a comedy store in the basement of what became Maloney's. There was Westwood comedy store. Puzzlingly, they opened it in June one year when everyone goes away for the summer. So that didn't work. But Westwood used to be really cool. I haven't been back there in ages either.
Diddy Reese, that's the coolest thing still there.
Yeah.
The place where you can get ice cream sandwiches with two different cookies.
Yum. Yeah.
It's like 50 cents.
Because they make their cookies with lard.
Is that why it's so good?
Yeah, that's why it's so cheap.
Mm.
Yeah, like an expensive cookie is made with butter and all sorts of snazzy ingredients. And they just put lard in there.
Explains a lot of my health then. Back when I was going to Westwood.
You can fucking eat anything when you're 19 years old. You're bulletproof.
I did.
And then around 25, your body gets unbulletproof.
Yeah. I'm unstoppable.
I never felt bulletproof.
Oh, Maddie.
So you're saying that Oreos are made out of lard?
I don't know what they're made out of. I don't know what Oreos are made out of.
Oreos are actually vegan.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
That's why you see a lot of vegan guys just chowing down on Oreos.
I don't ever see that.
You don't ever see that? I don't think you have one vegan friend.
That's a reason for that.
Yeah.
They're offended by me.
Do you, when did you, I thought you were so fucking funny on Buffy.
Thank you.
I mean.
I had a lot of help.
What?
I mean,
yes, Joss.
I had great writing.
I know, but you still have to be funny to deliver the right.
True, I am quite funny.
And my girlfriend at the time and I watched all 7 seasons in a period of 3 months because I'd never watched the series. And so many of my nerd friends were like, "You have to watch it. It's really funny."
It's kind of part of the nerd.
It is,
you know.
And I was like, "Really? How funny could it be?" It was like a teen vampire show. And we watched it, and by episode 4, we were completely hooked into the show. And when you came around, we were just in love with you and with your character on the show. I think I tried to friend you on MySpace in 2007.
I was on MySpace for like a second, and then I was off.
So can you just go on and friend me now?
Are you still on? Yeah. I had a good time on that show. I did. It was definitely the longest time I spent on something.
Yeah.
And it helped, you know, I don't know, casting directors would ever see me in a way that they hadn't really seen me before. Would have wanted to cast me as you sort of, I don't know, serious drama. I was like, I can be funny, I promise you. If you just give me a second, I'm sure I can win you over. So that it went a long way to helping.
When did you discover you were funny?
Chris, speak up. Speak up, Chris.
What?
Speak up. No one can hear you.
Jonah, I'm trying to be... This is for dramatic effect.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry.
Emma, when did you discover?
As soon as they told me, I think. No, it did. I mean, and it didn't even... You know, I think it surprised everybody. I was only supposed to be there for an episode. I came in for a one-day guest star, and, you know, thankfully he saw something he liked. Joss. So that bode well. For me,
that's what happened with Fonzie.
5 years later, whatever.
Fonzie was supposed to be one episode of Happy Days. And you were the Fonzie of Buffy. How does that feel? That's got
depressing.
Feel pretty good.
No, I don't. If that's the case,
Ben Linus. Ben Linus was supposed to be like in 2 episodes and then gone.
I love him,
Michael Emerson.
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
Person of interest. What do we think? Have you seen
anything? I've only seen billboards.
I'm excited. I'll see it. I'll watch it.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan.
There's like a few Lost, not spinoffs, but like from writers and producers of Lost, like shows coming out, right? There's like 3.
What are they?
I don't know. I read like an article where it was
Brian Vaughn writing something?
Brian K. Vaughn?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he went back to comics.
All right. Well, that's the end of that story then.
Sorry, I wish I had more information for you.
Hey, don't bring up things if you don't know everything about everything.
Thanks, Internet.
We could look that up.
Yeah.
So, I want to talk about Bandwagon. I also kind of want to talk about just you as a performer, kind of going, I'm going to go do my own stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
When did you make that
decision? I've been, the seed of that actually was as soon as Buffy was over, and it's it's only been recently, actually, that it's actually paying off. I mean, I've taken that road very less traveled, to the point where it's like, you know, when you start sort of resurfacing, everyone's like, where the fuck have you been? I'm mm-hmm. like, I've been working my ass off, actually, is what I've been doing. Yeah. You don't see any of it. And I don't know, hopefully it will pay dividends, because when you kind of go off the radar, I mean, you in your mind, you're not off the radar. You are really working hard, but you're like, to the masses, are like, where, you know, do we want to care about you again? And so that's always the fear, you know, it's like, will you care? Will you care about anything that I'm doing? Will you care about the stuff that means a lot to me and to the people that I'm doing it with? It's always that it's risky, but, you know, I've somewhere along, I don't know, my late 20s probably, I was like, I don't want to be a mouthpiece anymore. I don't want to just do that. I love performing. I will always do it. I love acting. It's what I do. I'm very happy when I do it. But I actually have a lot to say. And hopefully when people see these various things or read whatever I'm doing or whatever, that they'll like, oh, she does. And it's cool or it's interesting. And I am a nerd. I'm proud to be a nerd. I think the nerds actually have the most interesting things to say. I mean, that's why I'm like, I don't give a fuck if you make fun of me for having all seven seasons of this, or I don't, you know, or the fact that I could quote aliens from start to finish or whatever. And ironically, none of the stuff that I'm doing has anything to do really with sci-fi or that sort of nerdy world. I just hopefully can bring that audience with me and make them care about something that I care about. Did I answer that? Did I meander?
No. That was a fantastic answer. And also, but just going back to what you said in the beginning about, oh, you know, it's kind of risky. I think it's the opposite. I think it's more risky to not try to create your own stuff in today's climate.
In today's climate, yes. But when I'm talking about this, I started to do that when money was still to be had in TV. Mm-hmm. The internet had not really taken over in any real way.
Really not that long ago when you think about it. We're talking about like 10 years.
Not even. No, I'm talking like
2004, maybe?
2004, 2005.
Right.
So 6 years?
Yeah, because YouTube was 2005.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
It was, you know, the whole thing about, you know, TV losing money for people, you know, streaming stuff online. That just was not a reality. I mean, and I think, like with Bandwagon, you know, the web series that we do, you know, that's it's for us, you know, it's not a vanity thing that we're doing, and it's not this sort of hobby that we have. I mean, this is something that we love doing, and B, we think is pretty good. I mean, we try to make, you know, a really high quality product and make it successful in this market, because you have to embrace. You have to embrace the internet. You have to make content for the internet. You have to. And as soon as networks and all that stop fighting it and really embrace it and figure out a way to, I don't know, bring it all home. I mean, the idea that, well, if you launch something on the web, the goal is to get it on TV. It's mm-hmm. You're going to fail, because very few will. And even if you do, it's all going to end up back on the net anyway. You're far better to just create the product and make a home for it. And it's hard, because there's a lot of content out there, and it's really difficult to get your stuff seen and heard and get it respected and validated, you know, by, say, the IMDb or whoever these arbitrary, you know, people are who decide what's worthy. You know, we've come a long way into, you know, getting that worthiness. And Felicia Day was a huge pioneer for that.
Mm-hmm.
She's sort of the template that everybody uses, and while that's great, it's also unattainable, because she hit a niche market that very few people could ever do. I mean, she really tapped into something really quite phenomenal.
Yeah.
And luckily for us, she did, and so it sort of can, you know, make this not seem like, oh, you're doing a web series. You know, it's like, oh, of course you are, and everybody is. Oh my God. I mean, I just, every time I read something, you know, some, you know, huge A-list films, whatever, is like, oh, now we're launching our web series, and everyone's trying to get in and get their hands. It's like the Wild West out here, really. It is.
It is, but I think in the same way that, you know, in the 80s or the 90s, if you said, I'm on a cable show, and people would go, that's adorable.
Oh, sweet.
You know, and then now cable...
Couldn't make it on network.
I know, exactly, and now cable television has...
Everyone's like, I gotta get on cable.
Far yeah. superior programming. Yeah. I mean, of course, the reason that it's far superior programming on cable is because there are less... hands involved, and cable television understands mm-hmm. that that it is their duty to program niche. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like if you have a small cable channel, there's only four people making decisions. It gets a lot easier that there's not a lot of people to fuck up the process.
Right.
You know, but with networks, it's like,
yeah,
there's an East Coast division and a West Coast division. And then there are the studios. Then so then you have like 30.
TV's sort of like your basic. Not that I love working in it. I'm not knocking it by any means. But in terms of all the cooks in the kitchen, I mean, it's like your U.S. postal, you know, regular mail, and cable is your UPS, your FedEx even. You know, you've got it's streamlined, and it's very sort of, you know, the smaller content with which you can do, you know, you can play a lot more. On internet, I mean, anything goes. There's no one regulating right now. And I mean, sure, give it time. Someone will figure out a way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, right now we get to do whatever the hell we want. And
it will all come down to delivery system. It will come down to a simplified delivery system. The same way that I had dinner last night with a guy named Alex Albrecht. You know Alex?
Mm-hmm. I know.
Alex is on Dignation. He's a brilliant, nerdy, cool guy. And, you know, we were talking about podcasting, and he's sort of been on the forefront of that with Kevin Rose. And they, you know, like in the old days of podcasting, it was what you had to go through to actually get a podcast into your device was such a pain in the ass that no one would do. But as soon as Apple decided, hey, we're just going to include these in our, you know, in our regular delivery system, mm-hmm. then that just changed. As soon as there's a delivery system where web video can seamlessly, mm-hmm. and I know you can do it now, but I mean seamlessly get to your television, then they become television shows, and then, and then everything changes.
I know. I know. And it's exciting. It's frustrating at times, but it's ultimately so rewarding. It really is. And to see your audience grow with you and be as involved as they are. I mean, it's not like anything that I've done, and I'm very lucky that I can move in and out of a lot of different worlds right now, whether it's a comic book or the show or television, whatever the hell I'm doing, you know, they all ultimately feed each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, you make a connection here and it ends up, you know, facilitating something, you know, in a different arena completely. And it's great. I feel very, I don't know. I feel very empowered by it. I also am like, God, I don't want to really make any mistakes, because that's, you know, when nothing is necessarily regulated, you want to make sure you're not getting yourself into a deal that ultimately is not going to serve you
right
down the road. But so far it's moving along.
I think there's room for mistakes though, because the rate, I mean, a television show, like if you're developing a television show, it just takes fucking forever. And by the time your show actually gets made, you almost don't even remember what it was. Like, right. What was that thing? You know, but with this kind of stuff, I can call you up and go, hey, Emma, let's shoot a thing. Let's just make a scene and we can do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it catches on and someone makes a deal, and then we find out later, like, oh, well, that, you know, next time we'll do better next time.
Right.
It just, the turnover rate is potentially so high that I think it's okay, sort of in the overall big picture of, you know, figuring everything out.
Yeah.
I don't even know if there are really a lot of mistakes to be made, because like you said, there's just so, it's just so open.
It's so open right now. I mean, we have a few different things that are sort of percolating as far as the show having a home right mm-hmm. now, like it's on web distribution. I'd love to actually say what it is, but I actually can't. But it's a good place to be, that it's doing what it's doing right now. There's mm-hmm. papers flying around and whatever. And that's really great. And again, because so much is not really tested, we don't really know. All you can do is hope that whatever you decide to do, we'll get it seen by all the people that you need to see it by. And that most importantly, you retain your IP, because mm-hmm. that is the one thing we've always said from the very beginning. No matter what we're doing, we're not giving that up.
And intellectual property, not internet protocol.
Sorry. Yes, intellectual property.
Thank
very,
you, Chris.
Very,
sorry.
Thank you, Chris.
Sorry. Very, very important. Because, you know, it's again, an easier road to give that up. And that's been presented any number of times. It's like, nope, absolutely not. Because then what's the point? Then I'm back exactly to where I was again, and it takes off, and you get all the credit, you get all the power, you get all the money. No, mm-hmm. F you. No, absolutely not.
It's just, you know, having that brain, I mean, like, you basically are, what we have are a culture of performers now who are like mini industries, mm-hmm. right? Because you, in the old days, like, oh, you're, in the old days, you know, 15 years ago, you know, you're an actor. Maybe you pitch a show or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as common. But now you are the content creator. You're the performer. You're also you also have to be the marketer. Mm-hmm. You also have to worry about the legal terms, yes, protecting your intellectual property. And so it's are you happily challenged by that, or is it sort of like, ah, fuck, now I gotta go, I have to do all this stuff now?
Most of the time I'm happily challenged by it. There are times when I feel very overwhelmed. Like I just want to like crawl under a rock because there's just so much coming at you, and this is all very self-created, and I'm happy that it's happening, but I mean, it's not just Bandwagon. I mean, there's three creators of Bandwagon. One of them, Camilla Ranson, is my, and other projects, she's my writing partner, and she and I, did a digital comic, and this was back, you know, and it's becoming more so the thing to do now, but even at the time it was like, digital comic, like what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. It's like, well, because it's going online, like that's what you have to do, like it's embrace it, because if you don't, you know, someone's just gonna photocopy the fucking hard copy anyway and put it online, and they're just gonna steal it, so just put, you know, embrace it, whatever. And so we started out with Contrapussy, which is a cat. It's a satire, whatever. And we started online with that, and then IDW picked it up, and that'll launch later this year, like fall. Like, and then they're doing like an actual book with it, which is great. And that gave us the idea to do Ripped, which we wrote a pilot. We haven't talked about what Ripped is. We've been actually very misleading with what Ripped is, because we purposely didn't want to, I mean, it's registered to high hell, but we want to figure out a way to, you know, appropriately promote and launch this. But Ripped will start as an online digital, mm-hmm, graphic novel, comic, whatever, and then print a limited amount of, very, very limited amount of, you know, like issue one, and then, you know, television, the show, whatever, whether it's TV. I don't see how, unless there's some sort of massive financing to do it for the web, currently I think it has to be on television. So we sort of have geared it to that. And that's with, right now with Shine, the production company Shine, who does Merlin and whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's with that as the show, that's with them. But for our purposes, we're like, well, again, to make sure that we are taken care of and then no one can sort of circumvent our power, we're going to put it online first. We're going to truncate grossly the pilot and everything else. And we're going to, you know, sketch it all out and put it up there. So that, you know, we've been talking about it and talking about it and talking about it, so that when it, you know, goes up, people are like, wait, what is this? You know, we can say, you know, well, this is what this is. And then send, you know, all the data back to the company and whatever else, so that when it's, you know, comes time, hopefully when everything goes well, you know, you can have a bargaining chip.
Well, it makes a lot of sense too to create something,
and they think they're getting something really cool, hopefully.
Yeah,
that's not just a property that no one has any idea. There's actually, well, they go, well, no, you can document that people have been talking about it for X amount of months on blah,
right?
So you know that if you animate it, when I animate it, but you know you make a live action show out of it, that you already have some people, you already have interest, as opposed to trying to do something from scratch.
Are you ever able to shut your brain off?
No, it's really bad. Well, I do when I run. It's been so damn hot though that I haven't moved my body at all, and it's making me kind of agitated. But I can shut off for about 45 minutes when I'm up Bronson or I'm somewhere.
Yeah,
and I do, and I need it. Or like when I go for a long drive, like I'm supposed to go up. Hopefully, if something comes up, it comes up. But I'm set to get in the car on a week from Monday and make an 11-hour drive, a minimum 11-hour drive to my family's farm up the coast, like near, basically at the border.
Near Wairika? California.
Yes.
Where all the meth comes from?
Exactly.
Wairika's inland, though.
Meth capital.
Is it?
Yeah, Wairika's off the 5.
It's off the 101.
Eureka. No, Wairika is
a different
town.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant Eureka.
No, yeah. Wairika is a different... It literally is the letter Y.
Well, they actually do have a lot of meth up there, yes, like where my family is. Pot and meth.
Oh, yeah. And you go up a little more north and it gets more into heroin.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Really? Oh, so it's covered.
But yeah,
it's covered everywhere.
Eureka, and then there's... isn't like Manila around there?
I don't know. I do know that, you know, if you go too far off the trails, as I like to call them, that it's like deliverance up there, man. It's terrifying. I mean, there's Confederate flags and weird security cameras and like compounds where you know they're stockpiling ammo.
It's so funny how, you know, people have this idea of California of, you know, because obviously Los Angeles is the most vocal, you know, like the most globally vocal city in California. But really, when you take out San Francisco and Los Angeles, California's not really that liberal of a state. Like, there's a lot of, you don't have to go that far to find.
It's mostly farms.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of farms connect these cities. But even if you go into like Reseda, mm-hmm. you're like, oh, look at that. There's rednecks in Reseda. How about that?
Funny, right. I was in Oklahoma, and there was a.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there, sorry.
I ordered a beer, and the waitress girl was like, it's like, y'all from California, take me with you. And I'm like, she didn't say Los Angeles, it's just California. You're all from California? Oh, you got to take me with you. I was like, you know, California isn't that much different from this area in Oklahoma. A lot of strip malls, a lot of bad food, a lot of white people. And then I realized, who am I talking to?
Yeah. Yeah. No, seriously, can you take me with you?
Take me
you have to get me the fuck out of here.
Put me in your truck.
It's true, though. You start taking the drive. I'm sure you made the drive. You go up the 5.
Oh, millions of times.
To San Francisco or beyond or whatever, and you get about, I don't know, just past the Grapevine.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different, it's just.
Gorman is pretty white trash.
Night and day. Where?
Gorman.
Gorman, absolutely. Right up on the Grapevine.
Yeah, it's like right when you go into the Grapevine, there's Gorman.
Oh, yep.
It's just a nothing town.
It's like a truck stop
it's a
culture.
Truck stop, and they have an antique store.
Yep.
Yeah. And a Sizzler.
There's a
They got that Sizzler down there
time.
In Gorman.
How are there antiques? I collect antiques.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's like, antique store, but it's actually pretty
no,
dope.
It's pretty good.
Oh, I got
to
go.
You got to go to Gilroy for
the
old garlic festival.
Yeah, Gilroy Garlic Festival. I love driving through Gilroy, putting down the window, smelling the garlic.
I like to go to the Winchester Mystery House.
I like the smell of gasoline. Is that weird?
No,
I love the smell of gasoline.
I love the distant smell of gasoline.
Yeah, not like right
when it's on you, when it's in your face. It's almost kind of like the distant smell of skunk is not terrible.
Yeah.
Right.
But my dog got skunked once.
Oh, it's bad.
And when you're that close to it, something in your brain tells you that it's toxic and you're going to die. When you smell it, you're like, this is not supposed to be in my lungs. Yeah. Like, it's so, but as a distant smell, it's good. Like a hint of sulfur is not bad.
Yeah.
Little hint.
Just a hint.
Yeah. Have you ever actually been in the sulfur baths? Have you ever taken one of those?
No.
Those are pretty intense. They have them in New Zealand. I'm sure they have them elsewhere too. I just happen
to be.
Just New Zealand. Just fly 10, you know, whatever, 20 hours to go sit in a sulfur bath. But that's pretty overpowering. It's pretty, but good.
But then afterwards, you feel
really
refreshed.
Good. Yeah.
One time I swam in a tea tree lake in Australia.
Really?
Yeah, there were tea trees growing in the lake, and so the water was just black. And you go in, and it felt amazing, and it supposedly has curative powers because it's a tea tree lake.
Yeah, does it feel do you feel cold when you get in? Like no matter what?
No, it felt really good. The thing that sucked about it was that there were about 100 fucking gross hippie families just nude running around. Because we're all out in nature. and they were just like kind of dirty and that we were cleaning off in the tea tree.
It sounds like the beginning of some tale or parable. One time, 100 hippie families came upon
a
lake
tree
of tea tree oil.
The first family decided.
But it's setting for a really weird horror movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh my God, Tea Tree Lake, you guys.
Tea
Why are we not
it.
Fucking writing
Tea
this? We're not even Australian. Whatever. We'll just say it's. We'll just make it Australian.
You could do an Australian accent.
Not a good one.
But you can make it fun and be like Shaun of the Dead style.
Guys, again, I am from Australia, so I know how this lake works.
Exactly.
You gotta save them. I'm from Australia.
I'm from Australia. Did I mention I'm from Australia?
I'm from Australia.
I'm from Australia.
It's a hard accent.
It's a hard accent. I dated an Australian girl for a while. 4 years I had an Australian girlfriend. And then while I was trying to learn her accent, she was trying to lose her accent.
Oh, that's a drag. I like the Australian accent.
It's nice.
It's nice.
It is Australia, basically, they're sort of like the south of England.
Yeah.
They're like our southern, you know, super nice, like wonderful people. There are some like Yahoo rednecky types.
Aren't they everywhere though?
There really are.
Yeah,
the redneck gene gets in everywhere.
I'm sure.
There must be rednecks in Africa. Like, how the fuck did you guys get here? Well, I don't know. I just got on a boat and headed east. But I think it's interesting to hear you say that you have this nerd brain and it's I think. there's just so much overthinking that goes on, and I'm always fascinated by people who are able to get out of their own way enough to actually make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I also kind of wonder if maybe the reason why we stay as busy as we do, because you have so much shit going on too, that it's an active distraction to try to silence the never-ending chatter.
Never-ending chatter. Probably. I don't know which comes first, honestly. Yeah. They feed each other, for sure.
Do you think it's a blessing or a curse?
Well, if I actually make money off any of the shit, then it's a blessing.
Well, you and will. So, and you, if you're I not already, so. You will. If you're not already, you will.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't mean like I want a yacht. You know, I don't mean that. But, you know, when you're dealing with...
Why not?
Well... Because I'm deathly afraid of the ocean.
All right, fair enough.
I like looking at it. I like looking at it. I just don't want to be in it.
Private jet.
Don't want to be in it. Private jet. That would be nice.
Okay.
That'd be nice. So. What the fuck was I saying? What was I saying? Kind of something completely amazing, I'm sure.
We were talking about generating income.
No, I don't need like a, you know, I'm not talking like wealth. I just mean, I don't know, like... Okay, cool. Everything's okay.
There's nothing wrong.
Like everything's okay.
There's
yeah,
nothing
not
wrong.
Worried about anything.
I don't have to bust my ass to continue to make some. It's making itself. It's self-generating, and it's not that the hard work's ever really over, but that initial. I don't know, that push that you have to do, that you have to be on 24 hours a day, because if you don't, you'll lose. Like you have to. And I'm really looking forward to just saying, okay, it's doing its thing. I can just focus on the writing, or I can just focus on acting.
You may never do that.
I was gonna say, I don't think that ever goes away.
I think because especially, you know, I know a lot of people who are far more successful than I am, and I mean, whatever tiny bit of success I have, I know people who have achieved what I would think to be like, oh, you got it, you got that thing, you got that thing that we all have in our heads. You reach that point that we all say, oh, there's the goal, and once we hit that, we spike the ball and dance, and everything's awesome. And I don't see any change in the way that they were before. They still are, you know. I think it's a mechanism that if you feel like it's a problem, it's not going to be solved. But if you don't feel like it's a problem, then it doesn't matter.
Right.
But I don't feel like it's going to be solved. That being said, I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to make money from the things that you care about and the things you create.
Yeah, I don't mean like gross. I want to be,
fuck it. You should get $100 million. Who gives a shit? You give a bunch of charity. It's good.
No, and I don't mean because, you know, F wealth and F the rich. I don't mean that. I just mean that's not my... That's not my end point. I just want it to be. And bottom line, I don't really think the paydays everyone was used to, even 7 years ago, are gone. They're just gone. The business is so different.
Those are, but I feel like there's other ones right around the
corner. If someone could figure out how do you make a profit off of something that is essentially free?
Mm-hmm.
Because you go online and pretty much, you know, anything that you do there, you can figure out a way to steal it. I don't, because I think, you know, I've actually value paying for something, but a lot of people don't. And there's that sort of pervasive idea, which I don't agree with, that art, that you can just take it. And I have these fights with people. I have friends who torrent and they do all that. I'm like, why would you walk in to... If you need a new car, would you walk into Lexus and say, I'm just going to take this car out? Cool, right?
I'm just going to torrent this Lexus.
Yeah, I want it. So I'm just going to take it. Or walk into, you know, a clothing store or a restaurant and say, cool, thank you for the meal. I'm going to leave now. Well, of course not. You pay for it. So why is it, because it's online, it's up for grabs? Because it's a very strange...
Mindy Kaling has a great bit about that.
Yeah.
Like, I would steal that car if I could just touch the car and I get an exact copy of your car and you also get to keep your car. Yeah, I'd steal your car.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess people also have a different view of things that aren't in the physical world. Content.
That's an interesting idea.
Content is intangible. So people, you know, you consume it with your brain.
Right.
And so I feel like people go, well, I'm not hurting anything. I'm just looking at that thing. I'm just looking at it. Why can't I just look at it?
Right.
And I understand. I think what's going to happen is that because the basic building blocks are there. We know that you know, what drives advertising models are, well, X number of people look at this thing. We put our product in front of those eyes, and that helps you drive consumerism. And I think we have the foundation of that with all of this kind of digital stuff that we're doing, whether it's podcasts or web mm-hmm. series, because you know you're getting the eyes or the ears.
Right.
Those people are there. So it's just about forming more creative relationships with advertisers. And then, you know, like I've said to people on this show before who listen to the show, yeah, we're going to have sponsors sometimes because it's expensive to give away free stuff.
Right.
And that money, and I would rather not have you pay for it. So, you know, you just have to know that that's part of the relationship for getting this thing that you want.
Right.
So I think it will come from, you know, people like yourself forming relationships with, you know, advertiser sponsors the way that networks have marketing departments or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And that sort of leads into some, you know, some ways that people are, which we've thought about as well, funding their content online is, well, do you brand mm-hmm. your product or whatever, which is a slippery slope. It can be with that as well, because then oftentimes you say, I don't know. I keep going back to Lexus. I don't know why. Maybe because I don't know.
Are they sponsoring your
podcast? They are. No, maybe because I think they sponsored Lisa Kudrow's web therapy.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I think that's probably why I keep going back there. But they, and I don't think they did this with her show, but I'm saying that if you have, let's say, a Lexus or whatever, they're like, okay, yeah, we're gonna sponsor your show. We're now branding you. We would like you to make sure that in this scene you're doing, you know, they start infiltrating your content as opposed to just being brought to you by Lexus, which cool, because that's how that is in television. You know,
right.
A lot of the times brought to you by blah, blah, blah. But it's not always the case with web series. And it ends up, again, like I said, infiltrating your content, which is tricky, because then that's part of the joy of doing what you do, because you get to do whatever the hell you want. And then suddenly it's like, well, no, we were really cool. But if you could just change us, and the president's daughter really, really loves it. And if you could just make sure you put her in scene five, that would be great. And like, but I don't want to put her in scene five. I want to hire my friend, or I want to hire that really good actress I saw on that show last week. But you can't. This is part of your deal. So again, it's tricky. You know, do you then have, you know, another $400,000 in your pocket to pay for the next season, or do you not and look for another way to fund your product?
Yeah.
You know, which is, like I said, we're sort of in the midst of figuring our next season out, which will actually be, and it's going to be confusing to people. We've already started. We're going to put a blast out about it, actually, but it won't be season three. It'll actually be season two. What we have as season two online is actually mistitled and needs to be season one.
Okay.
just because with this current season one was actually never a web series. It was the film, original film that we did, and we cut up and we put it online in 10 parts, and that's what spawned the idea for us to actually do a show about it. But when we were putting it online, it just seemed to make sense to call it, you know, a season, so people didn't get confused. But and we're probably going to end up confusing them even more when they're like, but I thought I was watching season two. No, actually, you're just watching season one. Next season two. And see what happens.
Do you guys do anything live? Have you ever done live stuff?
No. Well, you mean like in front of a live audience?
Yeah.
I did one job once in front of a live audience. I loved it. I was completely terrified. But everything else has been inside a studio. And no, there's no live. It's all improvised. I mean, everything we do, there's no script. Mm-hmm. We have a shooting script, like a skeleton, you know, of a story of like, well, we need to make sure, you know, Emma and Tracy and Yvette get to blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And go from there. And then that's, you know, the parameters. And then there's some, you know, direction in between there of like, well, make sure you hit this undercurrent. But other than that, I mean, we just go and, you know, you're dealing with groundlings. You're dealing with people who do this and know how to do this. And now it's so good for me, because now I'm just unafraid of anything. Like, I just go in, I'm like, well, if I can not break, if I can come up with something on the fly that makes sense and actually moves the story, you know, forward with these people, well then, you know, bring it. Like, I just, it's great. It's an amazing training. Have you ever done improv?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my stand-up gene is too strong
for
good improv, because you need to be a good team player.
Right.
And with stand-up, you get very reliant on yourself as the team.
I get that.
And so you rely on quick jokes, and you rely on trying to take control of the scene. And so that was always my biggest hurdle with improv. And I I'm just too much of a control freak to be a good.
I get that.
I mean, I feel like I can improvise well, but when you're talking about long form improv, or you're talking about, you know, I just feel like I get too stand up-y for it.
Oh, I get that.
But once you can conquer, you know, like I have a friend who wants to be a host, and I was like, well, you gotta take improv, like, because if you can get comfortable in that setting, no audition or no anything, that any kind of show they drop you into is never gonna make you afraid, because if you can stand up in front of a group of people,
right,
kind of not know where you're going, but still have the tools in your head to get through it and feel good about it, then you can fucking do anything.
That's what Conan did. Conan was took groundlings.
I love Conan.
Yeah,
Coco.
He's my favorite. I just love him.
Those couple of seasons with him as the EP of The Simpsons. Duh, genius.
Monorail.
He's so gifted.
Have you done Conan's show?
No.
You could go on that.
I'd love to go on. Maybe someday, soon. I don't know. Whatever. Figure it out.
I'll call someone.
You make some calls.
I'm gonna make some calls.
Chris, you're doing that again.
What?
You're speaking quietly. No one can hear you.
Jonah, I'm trying to make a dramatic point, and then that just sort of like ruins it.
I forgot.
Jonah, I'm trying to make a dramatic point.
I'm sorry, I forgot. I totally forgot.
Sometimes if we want to get louder, we have to get quieter. Do you see what I'm saying?
And I couldn't hear you anymore because it's in my bad ear.
Shit.
No, I'm kidding. I actually could hear you.
Sometimes when we put masks on, we're actually taking them off. How are you with the, are people generally respectful to you in terms, because, you know, when you're on a popular show like Buffy, I feel like I saw one tweet where you were like, I'm happy to respond to you, so-and-so, but my name is not Anya. So can you please?
Yeah, that caused a bit of a shitstorm, but I don't care, ultimately. I mean, I do care. It sounds awful, but no, at some point, the majority of people who I interact with, you know, on Twitter who follow me, they're fans of all kinds of things, you know.
Sure.
But you get your stalwarts, you know, you get your people who are just very much back then, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, I'm happy to engage with you, but you actually have to address me by my name. Like, I'm not going to pretend I'm somebody else. Like, that's just weird.
Right.
But I'm happy to, and they do. I interact with my, I talk a lot. I respond to a lot of people. Like, consistently, I think it's important to do that. Those sort of days of being out of reach and being, you know, mysterious and all that. It's all really nice, but it's not possible. I'm not saying go and do a reality show and film, you know, Big Brother style. I'm just saying that you have to embrace, you just have to. You have to tear down that wall and you have to talk to people.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're launching products online. You know, you have got to interact with your fans. You have to.
There's also a certain line, and, you know, I mean, I'm sure there are some people who be like, what the fuck? You're on a really great show. Why can't you be proud? And it's like, no, it's not that I'm not proud of it. It's just, it's slightly disrespectful to address someone by a character name, because it almost kind of says, like,
who do they direct? Who do they tell you by?
They don't call me, but I'm saying they still... Like, did I talk about this? I guess there was a review about, or there, like, a story came out. I did talk about this.
Yeah, MTV's Chris Hardwick.
Yeah, they said MTV's Chris Hardwick. I was like, okay, look, I'm happy that I did it.
I did see that.
Happy that I did it, but, like, you know, it's like, it's been a while, you know, and there's definitely other stuff going on, you know? And so you almost kind of feel a little, like, slightly disrespected, where they're like, oh, you really couldn't, you know.
I don't feel disrespected so much as that I feel like I'm failing miserably.
Because,
that's what I
because
feel
they're
like.
Referring to an old thing?
Yeah, like so old. Like wow, that's like 12, 15 but jobs
I'm
old.
I'm sure people
like,
still yell Forrest Gump at Hanks.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure they do, but they don't put, you would never, and an interviewer would never put Forrest Gump, Tom Hanks. It's just Tom Hanks.
Right.
Right? It's just Brad Pitt. It's just George Clooney. He's not Doug Ross.
But he's very handsome.
You obviously have your ER fanatics.
Facts of Life, George Clooney.
Exactly. Yeah. You know,
Roseanne's George Clooney.
Exactly. You know, there comes a point where I think you are able to, you've surpassed your past so much that you create this version of yourself that is an entertainer, is a performer, is not this person who played a role. And it's very hard, particularly with genre shows that I love, I obsessively love, but I'm also on the one hand, it's very helpful for me. And on the other hand, it's very difficult because I have to work 10 times as hard to break away from it. And I still haven't done it. At least in my eyes, I haven't done it. I mean, I will have people who love Life Unexpected. They'll love Time, or they'll love something. They're like, oh, this is great. Or now they love Bandwagon. But there is a definite default back to something that is so removed from my life at this point. I don't remember half of it. I really don't. When someone will ask me a question about it, I'm like, you clearly know more than I do. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's that, because we just,
you know, it's frustrating.
We just had Tom Wilson on the podcast yesterday, who played Biff in Back to the Future, mm-hmm. and we were having a very similar conversation. He was like, you know, it was a job I did, and so people, you know, you forget. I think because it means so much to some people in a very specific way, mm-hmm. and it doesn't occur to them that you're like, hey, listen, I did this job. I was really happy to do it. But at the time I was working and I just didn't think about it in those terms. And it wasn't precious in that way of, I better remember every moment of this because, you know, mm-hmm. you're just like, I'm surviving. I'm getting through. I'm lucky. I'm happy that I'm on this thing. And then you kind of move on to the next thing. And then that thing pops. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I didn't know that this was going to happen, and I wasn't kind of emotionally prepared for
that. That's the thing. That's the word. Whatever you're doing, it's popping.
Right.
Right? And it's that thing of getting whatever else you're doing, the next thing you're doing, to pop so loudly and so brightly that it trumps the thing that popped you in the first place. And, you know, my friend Seth, I'm sure you must have interviewed Seth, or you know Seth Green.
Oh, I know him. We're definitely going to get him on the
show. Okay, because, yeah, he's...
Because you've done Robot Chicken, too.
Yes. Yeah. And he, you know, he's actually... The key inspiration for Camilla, my writing partner, and I, when we did Contra Pussy, because I went to the set to Robot Chicken and I was like, this is just the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, you're just having fun all day long. Like, this thing that you created. And he took 4 years to sell that, 4 years to find a home for Robot Chicken. And now he's sitting on this little mini empire. And, you know, he's got his hands. He's the hardest working person I know. And he's got his hands in so many different amazing projects. And I'm like, you know, I want that. I want to do that. I think we could do something strange and animate it maybe. Or I don't know. But it was definitely the seed of what a lot of what we're doing now is having worked with him on that. And he's a great example of, you know, having been on this, you know, iconic show and an iconic character and having moved so far away from it because he created something that trumped it. And it's very hard to do. And I hear, you know, I see a lot of these interviews and, you know, articles or whatever on Sarah, you know, going back for Ringer, and which looks like a great show. And my friend Chris Palaha's on it, who I worked with last year on Life Unexpected. And like, I want it to succeed. I want it to succeed on so many levels because then maybe they'll stop calling her Buffy. Because
right.
It's like, dude, she's not, you
right.
know, it's like, she is. I understand that, but she's not. She's actually, you know, this well-rounded. She's got a lot going on other than that. And it reminds me for me of like I need to do. I have to keep trying. Like I have. And again, I'm very careful to not make people angry when I'm saying this because I'm very, very grateful for that time. And
but
I love
don't think
that.
You're coming off like it's I like want, you're not grateful for it.
I just want. I want. I don't want that to be my story.
Right.
I don't want that to be what I'm associated with. Like, let it be a part of what people will remember me by, or remember my work by, but not the totality of it.
Of course.
And I feel like, you know, I think that's part of why, you know, I'll shut off for 45 minutes a day, because until I do something that trumps that, that matches it even, just match it in its, you know, its weight, then I can't stop.
Well, and there's a disparity between... most people who, you know, when they look at just the way that they have to categorize all the different people that they think about in mm-hmm. a day, it's just easier to create these sort of one-dimensional mm-hmm. profiles because it's just like a shorthand.
Right.
But then to us, who are the people, we go, no, I'm multidimensional, and these are all the I'm a human being, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but I can tell you that having worked at MTV for 4 years, and there was this sort of unwritten curse that if you were on MTV and you had any degree of success on MTV, then you would never work on anything else.
Mm.
And no one would ever take you seriously. And so, you know, it took a long time for me. I mean, like now there's a whole generation of people that doesn't even fucking remember that I was on a show for 4 years on that channel. And that makes me so I'm proud of the show. I mean, it was a dumb show, but I'm proud that I worked on it. But that makes me so happy because after the show, I kind of just was like, well, I'm going to start doing stand-up now because it's something I want to do, and I'm just going to fucking do it no matter what. And I think it's more about the process than it is. I never really thought, I guess I didn't think as much, like, well, I got to trump MTV. I always just thought, well, I'm just going to do this now, and at a certain point, it'll catch on.
Right.
And I'm going to do it no matter what. And, you know, with a podcast, we're like, we're just going to do it. If no one listens, I don't fucking care. We're just going to do it. So I think there is a degree of, and it sounds like you're doing this, of just enjoying your process that, you know, that you're going through, this process of creation. And I think ultimately at the end of everything, that will be the thing, you know, that quote unquote trumps the Buffy thing. It'll be the, you know, it'll just be the sum total of all these things that you've put into the world and created and sort of your career. Because we can't control if we get another Buffy or another Singled Out or like some shows pop, some shows don't. You just do, you know, you just do as much shit as you can and try to enjoy the process.
No, totally. And I, you know, I'm hoping that the things that I have that I'm involved in, and you know, a few different ways, whether it's Bandwagon or Ripped or whatever, that while I'm in Bandwagon, you know, I'm also part of a creative team behind it, and you know, I can look at these people who have influenced me, like your Joss Whedons, or these people who, you know, Joss isn't Buffy. Joss is Joss. Joss has created a number of amazing things and continues to do amazing things. And I'm sure Felicia's well on her way to having her version of that as well. And that's what I want. It's like, well, I don't care if you, you know, want to have that be a piece of something that you remember me by, but I actually, hopefully, you know, these fans who are very involved with that part of my life will continue to be as involved and more so with these other ventures. And Ripped, I don't know, Bandwagon is its own thing. Bandwagon is a satire. I mean, that's a completely different audience than a sci-fi geeky crowd.
That's
But Ripped has a potential to be, it'll definitely hone in on that same group of people,
Not that you asked me, but it sounds like you're doing all the right things. I mean, from my perspective, I think you are doing all the right things because you know, you're creating all these different things, and they're things that you care about, and they're things that you control, and they're things that you made up in your brain. And so when that next thing comes along that does pop, this foundation you're creating, because anyone can get a lucky break. But yeah. I think what gives people what sustains people, like gives them that sort of long term career, is you do a lot of cool stuff that you care about, and then when something pops, rather than just being a kid who just stepped off a bus, how many people have you seen pop just stepping off a bus, and then it's like, okay, no one gives a shit about them anymore because it was just that one thing, and there was nothing deeper that they did.
Right.
But when people can deep dive, you know, down this well of Emma, and that sounded gross. I didn't mean it that way. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way. I'm sorry.
It's hot.
I didn't mean it that way. This hot, sweaty well. No. this musky well. No, but when they
a foul word, isn't it?
It is musky.
Like, moist. That's another bad one.
Musky, moist, and but when they can see all these other things and go, oh my god, so she popped on this, but wait, fuck that for a second. Look at all these other things she's been doing. Like that's what creates dimension with people. And so that's why I think you're doing all of the right things. And if you just keep doing it, enjoying this process, then you'll be in really good shape. But again, unsolicited advice, don't get so caught up in thinking that there's some kind of goal line that you have to hit that you don't stop and see that at some point you may actually have the thing that you think you're pursuing. Do you know what I mean?
True.
So it really is. I'm not trying to get preachy. I feel a kinship with you in that way because I feel like I understand exactly what you're saying, and there are things that I've thought about for years and years, and that things that keep me awake at night. So I feel like, oh my God, if I can impart any bit of, you know, and I don't know everything at all, but I feel like I've learned
some
things.
No, you know a lot, and you've definitely, you know, you have made, you know, you have seen your career on a vertical trajectory.
Several times.
No, but you know, you can map where you are, and that's hugely important. And you know, someone like, you know, you just had Bryan Cranston on.
Yes.
Legend. And that to me is a perfect example. And I don't know if that was you know, he pursued that, or that was just some genius agent. I don't know, but to put him on Breaking Bad after what he became known for, and in a very iconic way. I mean, that perform, you know, his it's not like he came out of nowhere, you know, and I would never in a million years thought to see him on Breaking Bad in that way. I just never thought of him like that. And now that's all I can think about. And for many, and I think just but for everyone, I think it's so far trumped everything that he's done. And he's just this, he's now just become this, I don't know, he's this larger than life entity right now. And I don't know how long that took, actually. I'm trying to think of how long Malcolm was off the air for, but it took maybe a minute. Not that he wasn't doing things.
It was definitely a few years, like four years maybe, yeah, or so. But he, you know, there were two things about him that struck me as fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I tried to connect with him a little bit on the idea of like, oh, you know, we're all performers and we get insecure and, you know, how did you get over that? And he was like, I never was. He's not an overthinker.
Mm-hmm.
Not an overthinker at all. And so for him, he just decided, I'm going to be an actor. I don't give a fuck if I have to live in a car. I'm going to be an actor. This is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to do stuff, you know, I'm just going to do stuff I like, and that's it. And the other, so for him, there was never any kind of like,
master plan.
There was never a plan in terms of, I have to get to this point or mm-hmm. I'm not successful. He always felt successful because he was always doing the thing that he wanted to do.
Right.
The other thing that he pointed out that he did was, you know, when he would finish one role, like on Malcolm, he automatically said, you know, it seemed, I'm pretty sure this is what he, to paraphrase what he was saying, what's the most different thing I can go do from that now?
Right.
And so, and he, and you know, he
had to wait.
What?
He had to wait.
He had to wait, but he found it. You know, he definitely found it. So he was, that was, I learned so much from him. Just in that hour or so that we talked to him. What a great guy.
Yeah, that was amazing.
He's a guy
so
that
you, talented.
I know.
It's like, God, you're so talented.
And
oh my God.
It just seems like he doesn't overcomplicate things. And yeah. I feel like there's a certain nerd honor in overcomplicating things. For some reason, we loved overcomplicating things, and I think it's because it makes us feel smarter because we feel like we're using our brains more. But at a certain point, you know, I was a philosophy major, and you'd fucking stand outside with, you know, like people in trench coats smoking and be like, how do I know a table's not the same table that you see? And how do I know that this color of brown? And then you're just like,
yeah.
At a certain point, you just
a
have
table's
to.
Just a table.
It's a fucking table.
Yeah.
So.
That's actually an analogy I use all the time.
Really?
Oddly enough. Yeah. Sometimes a table is just a fucking table. I literally, I say that for years when it just to my friends or whatever who are all crazy artists or whatever and who. Like you said, they overcomplicate. They think and think and think and think. And I'm like, God, sometimes it just is, man. There's no hidden agenda. There's no hidden reasoning. There's no great, you know, universal reason for this situation. Sometimes it just is. Sometimes it just sucks. Sometimes it's just great. That's just it. It's nothing more complicated than that.
And I feel like with Nerdy Brains, that is kind of our cross to bear and our sort of struggle that we have to overcome most of the time is just ignoring our brains.
It's hard, man.
I know.
It's hard. It's really hard, which is probably why I do escape with sci-fi so readily.
Yeah.
There's something very, like, I don't know. There's very, it's very peaceful to me. I feel like...
Can't be an accident that most nerds love the fantasy and the sci-fi. And the,
it's escapism.
Yeah,
totally. That and football, which, hello, Sunday!
Oh my God, I don't know anything about football. I'm so sorry.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, we're not guys.
I am, but I hide it a little bit.
Really?
I don't know shit about football.
You don't
I
even
just
like
don't
having it on?
No.
Like in the background?
I like watching it.
I don't.
But I don't go. I don't make it a point to.
Oh.
I don't understand it because it's something that I can't.
You grab the ball and you try to get it to the other side.
No, but you don't. Understand. But you don't. You watch other people do it. And you have no control over getting the ball to the other side. You can say, go favored color team.
Right.
You know, like I like the red and whites.
Because the red and whites had that one guy.
Yeah.
Much like in a
guy.
Movie where you root for the protagonist, you can watch a sporting event and root for whomever you'd like.
I'm going for reality television.
Wait, so did you ever watch Friday Night? I've just finished season one of Friday Night Lights, and I'm completely obsessed.
No,
obsessed.
But my friend Connie Britton is on that show, and
she's brilliant.
And was on the show because it's not on. But I never watched it, and you know, and people said, and I go, well, I don't like football, and they go, it's not about football.
It's not, man.
So
it's so good.
Now that the show's done, I will go back and probably watch it.
It's really good.
It's a masterclass. In every regard, it is seriously like, it's, I don't know why that show didn't cross. I don't know. Bad marketing.
Here's a fun story for you. Maybe this may not be fun for you. This may just be me hearing myself talk. But Connie was on before Friday Night Lights, like a few years before Friday Night Lights, Connie was on a sitcom and it got canceled. And a group of us went out to dinner that night and she was bummed the way that you are. And I think I made the horrible joke where she was like, yeah, the show's canceled. There was sort of this somber tone at the table. And I think I said something like, well, I think I speak for everyone when I say this is the worst thing that could have possibly happened. and it sort of like broke up the tension and we laughed about it. You know, she had a good attitude about it. And I know she was beating herself up a lot on the inside. Cut to a couple years later, you know, mm-hmm. she just fucking stayed in the game and mm-hmm. gets, you know, because Connie is so fucking funny that she also was just doing she was doing a lot of comedy work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, she does this thing that's totally different and it works. But you will get the same thing. You just, you're on the, it's there. It's there. I'm telling
you. Something. I don't know what it is. Something.
You feel it though.
I do at times. I definitely feel like I'm on some sort of precipice of something. And then something doesn't quite go my way, or I see a take that I don't really like, or I don't know, something. And I'm like, oh, failure. You know, like, God, you suck. It's horrible. It's never going to happen. You know, why am I even bothering? Why? I should just quit, go back to school, whatever. And I can very easily slip into that self-destructive. That failure mode. And it's almost at other times a full-time job for me too.
It's control freakism. I have it too. The fatalism is control freakism because you instantly, when you feel like you don't have control over something, you just go, I'm just going to destroy this because that I can define that.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can control that. So, blah, fuck you. Now it's dead.
Now it's done. I did it. Yeah. Well, luckily, that's honestly, I think, why I'm actually surprised that I do so well with my writing partner. I don't even know what I do without her, actually. And it's a huge deal for me to relinquish so much because it's literally at his head. It's half and half. It's completely even, just straight down the line with her, and it's really nice. It's like, you know, to actually have someone that you can bounce something off of and go, right, this is going to work, right? This is actually good, right? It's not just me. Like, this is an inside. Okay, what do we need to do? You know, and have someone be there, and you for them at the same time. You know, when they're like oh,
these two
God.
Nerds right here,
like these guys,
I bounce shit off them. They keep this rickety boat afloat. Of the podcast.
That's why I had to lose the weight. It was sinking.
Oh. So you can make those jokes. I have a this is my last unsolicited bit of thing that I will tell you.
Yes.
And I don't think I'm awesome and have all the answers, but I feel like I have a few.
I know, I like it. Do it.
So I apologize if I'm coming off like I'm
telling you.
Okay. So I have this thing where I have this weird aversion to authority. But also in the way, like if I'm dealing with customer service on the phone and you know, like these poor people, they're getting paid shitty. They don't give them, they're reading off a screen, you know, like when you're talking about your lowest level customer support, I would always, you know, because a lot of times they give you answers that are less than satisfactory for mm-hmm. the problem that you have, because most of our problems are not black and white. Mm-hmm. And so when they're just reading off a screen, you're like, but I'm telling you, this is the, you're right. Not listening.
Right.
I have this thing where I go, okay, I'm going to make my first reaction my third reaction. In other mm-hmm. words, rather than freaking out, like right away, going from 0 to 10, I'll go, okay, so what about this or this or this? And then if they persist with their end, I will try again for a second time.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I'm still getting bullshit from them, then the third time it's appropriate to go, this is all bullshit and I'm going to break it down.
Right.
What that does is it at least kind of ebbs your adrenaline a little bit, so you don't want to go into hyper-destructive mode right away.
It's not DEFCON 5
exactly.
or 4. Wait, which is the higher one?
DEFCON 1 is Annihilation? Annihilation is DEFCON 1.
DEFCON 1. Okay, so yeah. It's not DEFCON 1.
No.
Straight out of the gate, yeah.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. and that just makes you a little more mindful and a little more present rather than just rushing to that place. And sometimes you still freak out and it's fine to do that, but you freak out a lot less and you actually solve a lot more problems in the process.
Yeah.
So
no, it's good.
That's my dumb trick.
It's not a dumb trick. It's valid, and it's the trick is remembering your trick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because that
I'm supposed to be calm for two more tries.
That emotional part of your brain just likes to go right around your higher reasoning.
Oh, I had a, I lost my shit on a meter maid yesterday. But to my defense, she was mean first.
Right.
But like, I was getting my hair done, and I had, you know, the foils, you know, because they have to highlight, they have to put highlight my hair.
It's gorgeous.
Why, thank you so much.
Hand me a CD, Matthew.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's foils, and I'm like, oh, crap, meter. So I run out. No, I don't have, you know, an assistant, you know, like at the salon or something. You know, go out with the change. I go the change in the robe. I look like a fright fool. I know that I do, but I don't care. I don't need you to go do my errand for me. I'm gonna get to go do it for myself. I get all the change. I run out. I've got the change in my hand. She literally, I mean, she was just pulling up with the pen. She could stop. She could have stopped. She didn't.
But I'm like, she doesn't.
I'm like, oh my God, no, I'm right here. I got it. She's, and I'm like. She's like, you know, she just shakes her head, doesn't say anything, starts writing. I'm like, oh, come on. You can't be serious. I'm right here. It just expired.
I can't stop writing the ticket once I start writing.
No, what she does, no, worse than that. She stops with a pen. She looks at me and she's just like, look at yourself.
What?
Yeah. She goes, look at yourself. I should take a picture of you.
That's fucking shitty. Jesus.
Right? And then I lost it. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? You know you have a soul-sucking job. All you do is bring misery to people.
They hear that all the time, by the way.
Oh, my God. I'm like, fuck you. Take your picture. Oh, God, I know. I could have just been calm. I'm like, okay, great, you're a bitch. I'm just walking.
Then you slug the meter maid. It makes a tabloid. You blow up, and people are like, I should probably check out her show.
Yeah.
God, ridiculous.
That was a good response.
So silly.
Well,
first world problem, really, is what that is.
It is, but on a day-to-day basis, when you're trying to do the right thing and someone's like, nah, fuck you. You're just like, oh, come on, I'm doing my best here. What are you doing this to me for? I didn't do that.
Well, I feed people's meters. I do it all the time.
See, you have good karma. The CD's about to run out in 8 seconds. So let me do this. Let me let this run out. Damn it, the CD player stopped, and you just... First of all, I hate saying the CD player.
Yeah, well, hey, that's what we're living.
It's so 90s. And you and Emma were just talking about the most awesome chili recipes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, stop talking. I have to get this on the fucking thing because it's amazing. And you're throwing around words like cinnamon and chili and habanero.
I was going to put cumin
in mine.
Cumin's great.
Cumin. I use cumin in mine.
Not too much.
Right. Be careful with the cumin.
I like some cumin. Should I use any, what's the other one? Not cumin.
Cardamom?
I use cayenne pepper.
Cayenne pepper.
Yeah, I use cayenne pepper.
Or that or paprika.
Isn't the audience stoked that they got a piece of this conversation?
Shut up, Jonah. I think it's fascinating.
I don't. Because
Emma said she's making chili on Sunday.
I am. I'm making a big batch of chili in honor of football. Honor of the start of football.
And I make, I make chili like twice a week.
Football?
I'm making it for myself, of course.
Football.
And my boyfriend's friends and, you know.
Nice.
Do it up.
It's pretty sweet.
And I got a blow up pool too.
Nice. Oh, that's adorable.
Make sure it doesn't have a pump thing.
It's got a pump and it's got like the whole little fountain, the waterfall, a cascade thing. We just moved into a place and it's the whole yard is just, we're just tearing it to Jesus. I mean, it's an absolute natural disaster out there right now. But it's been so hot and I'm like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to, why not? Just embrace it and make it look like, you know, so I'm going to,
Inflatable pool summer.
And those are, there's, you know, for there'll be a table out there for Flip Cup. You know, I don't mess around.
That's incredible.
It's a day of joy.
I'm very excited for your chili.
I'm excited for the whole day.
Now, Matthew, you have to come over to my house and make chili.
I can.
Okay. Yours sounds really good. I'm gonna try to remember.
Very healthy.
What's the breakdown?
I use ground turkey because it's better for you.
Mm-hmm.
Bell peppers, green and red. The key is garlic. A lot of garlic. And chopped, and start that in the pan with a little bit of olive oil. Then you throw the lean turkey in, but you don't want...
Use red or white onion?
I use white onion.
Okay.
You don't want
red
too...
Onion. I like red onion.
Red onion's better.
Well, listen, hey, guys. Try it. Tell me what you
think. What I'm trying to say is that your preference of onion is wrong.
Okay.
Wow.
That's fair. But I like... Because I use such lean turkey, I need the onion to caramelize a little faster, and I find the white onions do. So that gives me a little more moisture to work with.
Oh, now, see? That's smart.
Yeah. And yeah, no, and diced tomatoes and a little bit of tomato paste, not too much because there's a lot of sugar in tomato paste.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't personally like the sugar.
Sure.
Because that makes me fat.
Okay.
And then yeah, just it's all about cooking it all in the frying pan. And then getting it all together in a pot and then letting it simmer.
Cut to next year, your face in a fucking chili jar. Matt Myra's yeah. Flaming four alarm chili.
Habanero sauce too, everybody. Habanero sauce. Cayenne pepper. And chipotles.
God, I'm chipotle so excited stuff. To do this.
It's really, it's very good. You. I use black beans instead of red beans. Go ahead.
Okay. Emma.
Yes.
Where, I know you are at Emma Caulfield on the Twitter.
Yeah, I am on the Twitter.
Caulfield.
Like Holden.
Yes.
Just where I took it from.
Nice.
Give it back.
Damn.
and then where are other places people can
well that for just me, that is my only public site.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is pretending to be me on Facebook and it's not me.
Oh my god, that's embarrassing. It's me.
It's,
oh man.
I mean, I have a private page but not a public page on Facebook, but that's my Twitter is, you know, I am my hub. But I mean, for Bandwagon, it's bandwagontheseries.com. It's, nice. It's our hub of all things Bandwagon. And Rips will be Who is Ripper?
Okay.
.com. And that'll be launching this month.
That's
and
exciting.
We interact with, you know, we interact a lot on Bandwagon as well. So, I mean, I do, you know, not just Twitter, but I will, you know, I do talk to people on Bandwagon the series.
Well, you're doing a lot of great stuff, and maybe it's a good thing that you're kind of like, I don't know if I'm doing the right stuff, because it keeps you motivated, rather than stopping going, look at how awesome I am. So I think it's nice. I think it's nice.
You.
But it definitely seems like all this stuff is going to pay off. Like, it's just fucking, like, that level of, that thing is never an accident. It just is just the constant actions of, you know.
I'm going to assume that you are right. it is easier to assume that you are right than some sort of, I don't know, Greek tragedy about all the efforts for naught. You know,
right.
that's not helpful to anybody.
No.
Now, if there's anything to sort of rules of attraction, whatever, then something at some point soon will break with these projects. If nothing else, that they become entirely self-sustaining in a way that... again, does not remind me of days gone by with those paydays from yeah, those were, you know, are what they are. But in a way that we all feel that we're doing well with what we have. And you know, again, to what you said, you know, there's some point where you have to feel like you are succeeding and not continually setting the bar higher and higher and higher so that you're always failing. And I don't think I'm doing that. I think my bar is, as it is right now, I think my bar is reasonable. I don't think I've set it so that I'm constant state of disappointment.
All I want is an airplane made out of diamonds and seats.
Well, that'd be good because it won't scratch.
Can you imagine if that was my end goal? I would just be,
I just want an airplane made out of diamonds and then seats that are actually naked human beings that I can just sit on. Like,
I'm sure Richard Branson's got some
objects.
Like
it. It's an island made of diamonds.
Virgin Galactic flight.
We have a saying on
can
the
I
podcast
go on that
about
somehow?
The, what
Virgin Galactic's first flight.
So
do you have $100,000?
Can we get me on that? Can I start a Kickstarter to get me on?
You can do whatever. Yeah, you can do whatever.
Everything
you want.
That's fucking going on in the world, people are going to give you $100,000 to go into space.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah.
No, Matt, I was being scathingly
truthful.
Sarcastic.
No,
fellows, you're
I
both idiots.
The Jonah.
All right, everybody, just raise $99,000. I'll come up with the rest.
That's it. It's not asking much, really.
Or just buy me the Back to the Future shoes. It's for a good cause.
They don't actually auto lace, you know
they
that.
I know, but they light up.
All right,
I would never wear them; they wouldn't fit me.
Your fucking smartphone lights up too. Like you can actually go on the internet with your smartphone. You have the sum total of human knowledge in your fucking hand, and you
I
want shoes either. That light up.
But they are the same shoes Marty wore.
I know. I want them too, but I'm never going to get them, so I have to be bitter about them.
Fair enough.
All right.
Yeah, those shoes suck.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Thanks, Emma Caulfield, for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was such a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to meet you.
Awesome.
Maybe put a little chili on that burrito this week.
Holler.
Sounds dirty when you say it that way.
Right?
You want to put a little chili on that burrito? What?
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
I'm Shimol Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now I'm coming back as a judge and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, the competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.